What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Ultimate Patriots Dr. Football and Around the League podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remotely from my medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me, as always, the CEO of Hedge Better, Justin Fine. Justin, what is going on, my man? How are you this evening?
Doing well, man. Hey, it seems like the football season just started. It's already starting to fly by. We're hitting that halfway point almost, you know. It's moving. We are moving.
Yeah, I mean, September and October, my two favorite months of the year. Crazy to think they're almost over.
Very crazy. Yeah, I got Halloween coming up and about to hit the back half of the schedule's coming up in a few weeks, you know.
Well, the stakes go up, but it's funny. It's a two-way street because you get those really great games that are really high stakes games, and then you get those like dog games, which, by the way, the Patriots are in this week. Pat's Titans, great example. All right, let's get to it. We got some great stuff to discuss around the league. This is the episode of the podcast where we just kind of fly around the league and talk about everything outside of Foxborough. And Justin, I want to begin by talking about Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. I slapped my son high five and hugged him when that Hail Mary happened. We're not Commanders fans. We're not Bears haters. It was just such an amazing play. Jaden Daniels, Justin, he has that energy. He's like a winner, right? He has that vibe. He's a winner. And those kind of plays happen to guys like that. If the season ended today, I really think there's a chance Jaden Daniels would be the MVP. If he's not the MVP, I think he'd certainly be in the top three. Justin, your thoughts on Jaden Daniels and the Commanders and one of the best Hail Mary plays that I think we've seen in a long time in the NFL.
Yeah, that was great. It was great. And just what makes it, I think, extra special is just the whole narrative of that game. I mean, you think about it, he was dealing with a rib injury. He was questionable, at times even doubtful to play in that. To think he was able to muster up the core strength to throw that ball, that within itself is impressive. But then you look at it, you look at the other circumstances surrounding the game. You got the Bears, you got the Commanders, two teams and organizations that have been so bad for so long, having good years, number one and number two overall draft picks. Like, there was a lot of kind of underlying narratives in that game right there. And that was just, the ending was just perfect. It really was. Like you said, Jaden Daniels was so cool, calm, and collected on that last play. And let's not forget that.
Didn't the play last like 14 seconds, by the way?
He kept it alive. Yeah. I mean, he didn't get a ton of pressure on him, but I mean, he kept that thing alive for a while. But let's just give a special shout out to, I believe his name is Tyreek Stevenson, the Bears defensive back, who at the beginning of the play, when Washington Commanders receivers were actively running downfield towards the end zone, he was looking away, trash talking fans in the stadium. And then not only that,
with his back turned to the play,
the ball had been hiked, the ball was snapped. He had his back turned, and then he turns around, tries to catch up and get back into the play, and ultimately winds up being the one who tips it back to the Commanders receiver. That was poetic justice at its finest.
I don't know if Tyreek Stevenson will make the NFL Hall of Fame. The odds are he won't. But if there is like a meme Hall of Fame, he is now forever a part of, his bust is in there, because like him, you know, playing up to the crowd is absolutely going to live in meme infamy forever. People are going to be sharing that. It is going to be it's going to be right up there with the cat. You know, the cat and all that other stuff. And all the famous memes, I think this goes right up there with all of them.
Oh, absolutely. And just so, so embarrassing. Look, if you're that speaks to, you know, the organization. Like, I know the Bears are finding a little bit of success this year, but you would never see that in Kansas City. You would never see that in Detroit. Like, there are just certain teams, certain coaches, you would never see that happen. And I think that's an indictment into Matt Eberflus and that Bears organization, that you would even think about pulling that in the final play of the game.
It is, but can I just ask a question? And maybe you'll disagree with this. Like, what he did was stupid. Right. It was disrespectful to the game. It was, it just made him look like a complete clown. It made the whole operation look like a clown show. Did it really affect the play?
No,
because by the time he recovered, like Daniel scrambled all the way to the right. And then he realized the play had already started. He got himself back into the play enough that he was able to tip the ball. I don't think what he did really is why the Hail Mary happened, is I guess my point.
I totally, totally agree. But it gives it, it just gives off that impression. Like that's the look. That's the look of it, right? Like in reality, that probably didn't matter at all.
No.
But it was just so great to see it unfold in that sequence.
Yeah, it's like actually like terrible luck if you think about it. Like you just happen to be like caught asleep at the switch, and then all of a sudden this Hail Mary play happens and you happen to be the guy that hits it, right?
Yeah.
And now you live in infamy forever.
Exactly. Exactly. Even it's not even the fact that he was the one who tipped the ball to the receiver, because if he had just tipped the ball to the receiver without the antics, people still wouldn't care. They would have just said, oh, that's bad luck. It was the antics beforehand that set up everything else afterwards.
Now, I do think it speaks perhaps on some level to like a lack of focus, which you could argue was the common theme for him doing what he did with the crowd and tipping the ball up, because that's like the one thing you're not supposed to do is hit the ball up. You're supposed to knock it down.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, overall, just a lack of focus in discipline. Yeah.
Well, Tyrique Stevenson, you now live in absolute infamy. And I think he's a good cornerback too, is kind of the irony, right? He's one of their better players.
He is. He's very good. That's going to go up there with like the butt fumble and some of these other.
Leon Lett, that was probably before your time. Leon Lett getting caught from behind on Thanksgiving.
Yep. Exactly. There's going to be a. That's going to go down in history with some of the all-time.
You know, the squirrel running out on the field. It's going to be right up there with all that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Let's talk a little bit, Justin, about the Detroit Lions. And, hey, I've said this before for other teams. I think it's very applicable to this Lions team, which is, look, good teams, you know, good teams have ways to beat you. Great teams have multiple ways to beat you. Great teams are like a Swiss Army knife. The Detroit Lions scored 52 points on Sunday, and their quarterback threw for 82 yards. To me, that's amazing. They scored a special teams touchdown. I believe they got several turnovers. They ran the ball.
Yeah,
I don't even know it's possible. How is it possible to score that many points in today's NFL without throwing for 100 yards? The Detroit Lions did it on Sunday. I think they are truly a great team.
They are a great team. And I think they're probably going to make another move or two before the deadline, hopefully in the defensive side of the ball, like we've talked about, but they are the class of the NFC right now. I think they're proving as the season goes on that they were not a fluke. They were not a flash in the pan last year. They are a very good team and they are hungry. Like that loss, that collapse in San Francisco last year, that didn't break them. It just made them hungrier.
You're right. And a lot of teams will, like, it's the whole Super Bowl loser thing. Okay, they didn't lose a Super Bowl. They lost the conference championship game. But how many times do you see a team have a loss like that on a prominent stage in a big game, and they just can't get to that same level the next season?
Absolutely.
And Detroit, it's the opposite. They have taken it to a new level.
Absolutely. They took that loss personally. They've come back this year looking even better than last year. And I'm rooting for them. I really am.
And they're crushing teams. Yep. They're not just winning. They're crushing teams. And also this, and I mean, we are fans, right? Like, they're super entertaining to watch.
They are. Well, you know what you think about, you talk about this, these new modern day NFL offenses. They got trick plays coming out the wazoo, right? They are aggressive. They will go for it on fourth down. They will do unconventional things. I mean, they're super creative. Like, they're everything that you want to watch in a football team.
Yeah, because you know, like, it's like, it's almost like there's like a playground razzle dazzle element there, where like they're running reverses and flea flickers and halfback passes, and it's just really entertaining to watch.
It is. It's super entertaining to watch. And it's translating into to results. I mean, they are dominant, and I wouldn't want to play the Detroit Lions if I was any other team right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say this 100%. I am 100% rooting for this Detroit team, given the fact the Patriots are out of it. They have become my adopted team this year.
Me too. I totally agree. As much as I don't want to see the Chiefs back in the Super Bowl, I think it would be great for the sport
if you
had the Lions prevent a three-peat and go in and beat Kansas City in the Super Bowl. That would be something. That would be something special, I think.
That would be amazing. That would be an amazing storyline. Yep. And pretty much everyone in America outside of Kansas City would be rooting for Detroit in that situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Cleveland Browns on Sunday, Justin. A lot of people probably lost a lot of money betting on the Baltimore Ravens in Cleveland. I thought that was a surprising outcome to not only cover for Cleveland, but to lose outright. We get to take a victory lap on Jameis Winston because we have been saying since the preseason, literally since the preseason, that the Cleveland Browns should be starting Jameis Winston over Deshaun Watson. It was plain to see for everyone in true Jameis Winston fashion. He played an amazing game and then almost barfed it away on the last drive. Did you see he threw what really should have been an interception to Baltimore defender, literally put it between one of the Ravens defenders' numbers. Guy drops an easy pick. Winston goes out and throws an absolute missile to get the game-winning touchdown on the next play. Classic Winston, but there's no doubt the Browns are a much better team with him versus Deshaun Watson. And they were energized. They were energized.
Oh, it wasn't even close. And we've liked Jameis Winston since day one. I think we've said he's an exciting quarterback, and he's certainly one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL. But that was – you could just tell that was an organization that had been – kind of released from the trap of Deshaun Watson. Like, he was weighing them down in every way, shape, or form. And I think that was just a totally new team that we saw. I mean, that was it's not like they got rid of Deshaun Watson and then came back the next weekend and beat the Giants or something like that. Like, you took down Baltimore. That was a pretty, pretty big win, pretty impressive win.
It really was. I mean, we were going into that game, both of us saying we thought Baltimore was the best team in the NFL. Yeah. And I that doesn't necessarily change my opinion about the Ravens, because these division games are tricky.
Yeah.
And I think they were playing a team that was energized just by getting rid of Deshaun Watson. You could see that the Browns, the players on that in that locker room responded to Watson being gone. He was literally Watson dragging down that organization single-handedly. And that is apparent now.
Yeah, it was so apparent. So I'm glad for the Browns that they can hopefully move on from that dark, dark chapter.
Yeah, I hope so. And look it. Hey, again, Jameis Winston, you know, I'm going to age myself with this reference because this is way before your time, but like, he is like a classic Red Sox slugger from the early 90s. He's like a Jack Clark or Tom Brudansky or an Andre Dawson, a guy that will strike out three times and then hit a 450-foot home run. But he keeps swinging for the fences no matter what happens. That's what he is. And I think in that sense, he's an exciting guy to watch. And I will be rooting for Winston and the Browns coming down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see them turn it around. I actually like Kevin Stefanski. I think he's a decent coach. I think he deserves a shot with a good quarterback over there.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Justin. It really is, because like, Watson was dragging him down too.
Yeah,
he's 100% on the hot seat. But
yeah,
maybe he gets a little stay now with what happened on Sunday.
Exactly. Yeah, bought himself some time.
Absolutely, and who knows? Maybe they string a few wins together.
Yeah.
Save their season. Okay, let's talk about Dallas and San Francisco game from Sunday night. I thought this was two teams playing for their season on Sunday night. And I think what you see is two teams now that are going in very different directions. I don't think San Francisco is out of it yet because they've had so many injuries, and we'll get to them in a second. But before we do, Justin, the Dallas Cowboys are completely imploding before our very eyes. I don't know what the problem is in Dallas, but I think Mike McCarthy is going to inevitably be the fall guy. The only question becomes, does it happen in season or does it happen in January? when does Mike McCarthy get it, Justin, in Dallas? And is that Cowboy season basically over?
You know, I'm going to say that they maybe let Mike McCarthy finish the season out. But regardless, they got a big problem. They've had a big problem for a while. It's not anything new. Mike McCarthy is on, but he's been on borrowed time, I think, for two seasons, if we're being honest. Jerry Jones is clearly still a problem. That entire organization has a culture problem. That locker room is dysfunctional. That team is dysfunctional. And we're continuing to see, look, I this is one thing that we've differed on is Dak Prescott. And yep. I think we're at what point do we start to look at Dak and say, dude, what is going on here? Like, I know that the team has a culture problem. They got an ownership problem. They got a coaching problem. But they also got a quarterback problem, too.
Well, the problem with the Cowboys, Justin, and this is the irony of the situation, Mike McCarthy is going to be the fall guy. He's going to lose his job because the team stinks. I know you don't think Mike McCarthy is a great coach. I am not as down on him as you are, but I understand this. The problem with that team is not Mike McCarthy and it's not Dak Prescott. It's the way that roster is constructed. They are top heavy. They overpaid Dak Prescott. Jerry Jones is the general manager. Stephen Jones, the other general manager. Yeah. They're the ones responsible for the mess in Dallas. They have way too much of their cap tied up in a few players at the top. In the middle and bottom third of that roster is junk. The defensive line is junk. The offensive line is junk. The front seven outside of Micah Parsons is not good. They can't stop the run. They don't have any running back. They literally don't have the Ezekiel Elliott and Dalvin Cook are the running backs. It would be great if it was 2018. Right. It's 2024. Prescott is the fall guy. McCarthy will be the fall guy. The problem is Jerry Jones.
I agree. I agree completely. Jerry Jones has been the problem with this team for a long time. And every year it's, will it be different? Are things going to change in Dallas? Blah, blah. It's not different. It's more of the same. This is a dysfunctional organization. They're probably going to miss the playoffs. And you know what? I love it. I kind of love it because just like there's organizations that it's easy to root for and get behind, there's organizations that it's easy to just hate and relish in their collapse and in their pain and suffering. And for me, that's the Cowboys. I'm sorry. I am so out on them. I'm so happy to see this kind of all blowing up in their face. I think they've been artificially propped up for a while.
Well, they haven't done anything in like 30 something years now, right?
No, the expectations for the last however many years have been that, oh, this is a good team. This team could compete. What they could, you know, what are we going to see a different Cowboys team this year?
Say this. And like you, I don't know if you watch ESPN in the morning, right?
Yeah.
But for the amount of time they spend talking about a team that hasn't won anything in three decades and the Dallas Cowboys, right? They talk about the Cowboys constantly on ESPN for a team that has done absolutely zero since the early 90s.
I agree. They get a lot of attention. They get a lot of hype and they get a lot of false hope. That's what they get.
They do. And I'll say this, you know, I don't want to make Dak Prescott sound like the victim here because when someone pays you $250 million, you know, that's a wonderful position to be in life. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think that in a football sense, it was fair to give him that contract, and then it prohibited them maybe from building that roster the correct way. And look, I don't think Dak Prescott's most ardent supporter has ever contended that this guy is a Tom Brady or a Pat Mahomes that can take that kind of money and elevate to that level the team around him. And I think that really is the problem. One of the fundamental problems with that roster construction is just an overcommitment of resources to quarterback. But to me, that does fall back to the GM.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. You're very top heavy. You got CeeDee Lamb. You got Dak Prescott. And look, Michael Parsons needs to get paid too. He's gonna get paid
because they haven't even signed him yet.
So
I'm gonna tell you something. If they're smart, they'll think about letting him walk because I think they're better off rebuilding that front seven and that offensive line with some B-level players than committing more of their cap to another top player. I mean, it's going to be painful for them, but maybe they should let him walk.
I agree. I mean, you got all your money tied up in Dak, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons. I mean, what are you going to be able to do as far as filling out the rest of that roster? So, yeah, I totally agree. You might have to let him walk.
Absolutely. He can come to New England. We have plenty of cap room.
Yeah, for real.
All right. And what about San Francisco on the other side, Justin? They're 4-4 now. Any chance they salvage their season? You've been down on them since July.
I think they can salvage it just because of how bad I think the NFC is overall. Like, the NFC is not strong. I think there's plenty of room for the 49ers to find themselves in a wild card spot for sure. I still don't think it's going to be, you know, a year to brag about for them. I think they'll find maybe an early exit in the playoffs. Even if Christian McCaffrey comes back, you still lost Brandon Ayuk for the year. Like, that team is not going to be the same as they were in the past. So I think they could still make the playoffs just because there's not a lot of talented competition.
In a soft division, too.
In a soft division, exactly. So I do think they could salvage their season, but I don't have any expectations for them to do anything.
A three-way tie for the NFC West right now. 3-4-4 teams, Arizona, Seattle, and San Francisco. Yep. And that was one thing we can take credit for, is we both predicted Arizona would be better than a lot of people thought they were going to be. And right now they are in first place in the NFC West in week 8.
Yeah. And let's not forget too, the odd man out in that situation, the LA Rams.
Yeah.
They just got Cooper Kupp back. They just got Puka Nacua totally back. Like, that could arguably be the most dangerous team in that division.
You know, I was high on the Rams.
Yes.
And it looked like I'm wrong about that right now, but I will say this. I agree with you. They're very much alive. And you tell me, you watched the game last Thursday night, I'm sure like the rest of us did. Do they not look like a different team with Kupp and Nacua both on the field?
100%. That is a team that is just, if they can stay healthy, that team is going to keep getting better and they're going to be dangerous.
Absolutely. And of course, taking down the 5-1 Vikings, I mean, going into that game, that's a legitimate win for that Rams team. So I would not be surprised when it's all said and done if the Rams still win the NFC West. As of right now, they're a half game back. They're 3-4. Every other team in the division's 4-4. They've played one less game. So they're really right in it.
They are.
Justin, we got to talk a little bit about Anthony Richardson and the Colts. So this is one you were wrong about back in the preseason, because you were high on this player and you were high on this Colts team. Right now, Anthony Richardson has the lowest completion percentage of any quarterback in the NFL in the last 20 years. He is right up there. He is slightly worse than such quarterback luminaries as Tim Tebow, Jamarcus Russell, and JP Losman. Some names from the past there. He is now benched. The Colts are going with Joe Flacco this week in their game. I believe they're the Sunday night game playing against the Vikings. Your thoughts, Justin, on Anthony Richardson's situation in Indianapolis?
Well, you know,
taking a breather.
I should have this offseason, I should have saw the writing on the wall, the red flags, when I heard that Anthony Richardson had been planning or was planning to drop a musical album, a rap album. Now, not because I don't like rap music. I love rap music. But I look at that and I say, you got a guy entering year two who just missed almost all of year one with injury, and he's focused on dropping an album right now. That is not a guy who's 100% all in and has his mind and his effort and dedication focused to being a quarterback and taking that year two leap. Like, there is no progress. If anything, probably just regression. I mean, I know he only played like 2 or 3 games last year, but the 2 or 3 games he played last year look better than any of the games he's played this year so far. Like, you got to wonder what his commitment level and his effort level is, and the intangibles, because clearly the guy is physically gifted. He's a physical specimen, but I'm starting to wonder about the intangibles.
Let me push back on that a little, because what he does in the offseason or doesn't do in the offseason, that's one thing. Is he focused? Is he not focused? I don't know. I have no idea. Anthony Richardson right now is a guy that played 11 games in college and then played 2 or 3 games in his rookie year.
Right.
And has now played like 3 or 4 games in his second year. He is exactly now what he was when he came out of Florida a year ago, which is an inaccurate passer.
Yes.
Who can throw the ball a mile, but can't hit the side of a barn. Yep. And that's what everyone knew he was. So I think the real problem here is the fact that the Colts drafted him fourth. He never should have been taken that high.
No, I agree. You did have that, you know, that was the year you had the run on quarterbacks, right? Where people, I think, were going a little bit higher just because of the nature. I believe it went quarterback.
It went Young, Stroud, non-quarterback at three, who I forget, and then Richardson at four.
And then Richardson, yeah. I think it was actually, it might have been Will Anderson, the Texans guy.
That's right, because they had the back-to-back picks.
Yeah, so... But I'll say this, I'd still take Anthony Richardson over Bryce Young.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think absolutely. I mean, Richardson has a chance to play, but I guess what I'm saying with him too is like, you know, you want to talk about a developmental prospect. I mean, Anthony Richardson is a developmental prospect who clearly has a long way to go. And there have been, to your point, glimpses of hope from Anthony. Like, he does make some amazing throws and plays at times.
He does. The guy is a physical specimen, like 100%. But that's why I brought up him, you know, him having a music career, though. It goes back to what you just said, which is the guy has played a handful of games, including his college and professional career. He's coming off of a big season-ending injury. Like, this guy should be 150% bought in towards honing his craft. Like, he's not at Florida anymore. The guy has some serious, in my mind, off the field and intangible issues because he should be doing everything he can to get better at football, right now. And we're not seeing any signs of that. Like, again, he's looked like he's taking a step back in year two.
Yeah. Or not developing. He was a career 54% passer at Florida, who was drafted number four in the draft. I mean, it just doesn't add up and make sense. And then you know, people are surprised when, you know, 8 or 9 games into his career, he's a 44% passer in the NFL. I'd say it's totally consistent and par for the course. And I'll say this, Justin, you know, I'm not high on Anthony Richardson. I think the draft pick was a mistake by the Indianapolis Colts. I don't like the player. I think it was a huge gamble, bad draft pick. You can't pass judgment on this guy until he starts like 30 games.
I agree.
You know, especially him, because he could be one of these cats like Josh Allen, right? Think how bad Josh Allen looked for his 2 years coming out of Wyoming, a relatively inexperienced guy coming out of Wyoming. And he looked like an absolute bust. We stood in the stands in Foxborough. We laughed. Josh Allen looked so bad his rookie year. I never forget it. And now look where he is a few years after that, MVP caliber player. So, you know, until Anthony Richardson gets like a solid 25 to 30 starts under his belt with some consistency around him, you're just really not going to know what you have.
I completely, completely agree. There's a lot more that you need to see out of him. There's a lot of development that still is to be desired. Like, let's not forget, like, the kid, he's got potential, but there is a lot of growth and development that he still has room for. But to bring it back to a point from, you know, the earlier episode, when we were doing the Patriots podcast. Yeah, you're talking about, you know, how important it is to have a competent backup. Love that the Colts got Joe Flacco, right? Because it's like, it's so important. You know, they're almost a better team. They are a better team with Joe Flacco than Anthony Richardson. We talked about it earlier today. Anthony Richardson just got benched. Super important. But I wish the best for the kid because I want him to do well. I want him to be good. He does have a lot of raw potential and a lot of physical skills, but he needs to develop more. He's not there.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Justin, if the season ended today, the Colts are the 8th seed. So they're a half game behind the Chargers. You've played one less game than them. Yeah. So Joe Flacco coming in, they are a better team, and their season isn't over yet.
Right, exactly. So.
Let's talk, Justin, about three coaches. I want to throw out a few coaches who I think should be on the hot seat, but I don't hear their name mentioned that much. I mean, we've talked about the hot seat on previous editions of the podcast. Mm-hmm. We brought up names like Doug Peterson and Mike McCarthy, we just talked about. And there's a couple other names that always seem to find their way onto that list. I'm going to give you three guys that I think are very subtly moving onto the hot seat. I want to get your take. Number one is Zachary Taylor from the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals are 3-5 now. Well, you know, really well below expectations. We're supposed to be one of the best teams in the AFC. Is Zachary Taylor on the hot seat? They have a 25% playoff probability currently, by the way.
He should probably be in the hot seat, honestly. I mean, I've never been a big Zach Taylor fan, honestly. I think I don't know. I just think that he is somebody that skates by. He flies under the radar a little bit. Nobody really talks about him or his coaching staff. But there's some problems. There's some problems in Cincinnati right now. And I just want to go on record. I still think this Bengals team is going to make the playoffs. I think they finish above 500. But with that being said, I definitely agree that Zach Taylor is starting to get some negative attention, and rightfully so.
Well, here's the Bengals' saving grace, is the fact that there are some really bad teams in the AFC this year. Yeah. And you look at the teams behind them. Titans, Jets, Patriots, Jaguars, Raiders, Browns, 2-6, Browns, Dolphins, 2-5. You name me one of those teams that's going to leapfrog them into the ninth seed, which is what they are right now, the ninth seed. The Bengals are really only two games out of the playoff picture right now, and they hold the ninth seed in the AFC currently.
Exactly, exactly. And I think they will end up in that 6 or 7 spot when it's all said and done.
What about this one, Justin? Matt Eberflus of the Chicago Bears. Okay, let me give you this stat. He has a 14-27 record as coach of the Bears. He's 13 games below 500. The Bears are 4-3 right now. If the season ended today, they would be out of the playoffs. I think if the Chicago Bears don't finish the season strong, and certainly if they don't make the playoffs, or at least hover around 500, I think Matt Eberflus might be gone this year.
I totally agree. I think he's somebody that I'm actually shocked that he made it to this year. I really thought after, you know, because this is what for him, year four in Chicago, it's at least three.
Yeah.
It's three.
Three.
So the first 2 years were so piss poor for him. And you figured, okay, they got this whole new regime change going on in Chicago right now. They're, you know, a lot of turnover, bringing in a new quarterback. Like, I thought this would have been the perfect time to get rid of Eberflus coming into this year. But they stuck with him. And, again, to my surprise, but I'm shocked that he's still the coach, or he is even had an opportunity to be the coach this year. So if they don't finish strong, if they miss the playoffs, I 100% agree. You got to get rid of him. You got to move on.
Because rightly or wrong, fair or unfair, the expectations for that Chicago team were high this year.
Very high.
People, very high. I think they had an over-under win total of 9 or 8.5. I just want to, just to kind of fit into the discussion here, want to read to you the Bears' remaining schedule. Their next two games are cupcakes. They got the Cardinals. Well, not a cupcake. That's a tough game in Arizona. I shouldn't call that a cupcake. Then they got the Patriots. Okay, that's the game they'll probably win in Chicago. How about this? Packers, Vikings, Lions, 49ers, Vikings, Lions, Seahawks, Packers. Now you tell me,
that's a gauntlet.
How many of those last 7 or 8 games is the Chicago Bears going to win?
Yeah, sure. This Chicago Bears team, I think they're going to be lucky to be hovering above 500 when it's all said and done.
You know what? Based on that schedule I just read you, I mean, I don't think they win in Arizona this week. They'll probably beat the Patriots. They may not win again. Yeah. I mean, really, like, who are they going to beat? Packers, Vikings, Lions, 49ers, Bears, Vikings, Lions, Seahawks, Packers.
And how interesting. I agree. I totally agree. And how interesting would it be to watch the unraveling of Caleb Williams, how he handles something like that? I think it would be a very interesting sight to see in football, depending on how the rest of the season goes.
What did you think of Caleb Williams' performance in Washington this week? Because I was
unimpressed. Yeah, I was going to say, he didn't play that well.
He didn't play well at all.
No. And, you know, and it's funny, too, because he had all the extraneous reasons in the world. You talk about all the, you know, him versus Jaden, this and that. Like, that was a huge game for them, right? Like, he should be able to rise to that occasion. But also the fact that the Commanders have one of the worst passing defenses in the league, like if not the worst, like statistically. So the fact that he kind of dropped the ball like that, I thought was a little bit of an indictment on him, to be honest.
Agreed. I mean, I think it's unfair to pass judgment on him at this point because he's a rookie.
Right.
But you know, I don't think I'll put it this way, Justin. If I was redrafting the quarterbacks, I would go Daniels and May ahead of Caleb Williams without even hesitation.
Yep. I totally agree.
You have to put Daniels one based on what he's done. I think May is 1A because he's looked so good, even though he hasn't played as much. And you could argue that Bo Nix has looked better than Caleb Williams too at this point.
Bo Nix has looked really good. Yeah. Caleb has done better than I think I expected him to, but he has not done enough to separate himself from the rest of the pack.
He was putting up some lollipops on Sunday though. Some of those bloopy passes. I mean, you know, this whole thing about him being this like Mahomesian talent. I mean, I don't think he's a terrible quarterback. You know, I really don't, but I just don't know if I see the upside in him that's been sold to us.
No. Well, how many times have we been, you know, promised these generational talents at quarterback, these second comings? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, another perfect example. Like, we get these narratives forced down our throat all the time. And it doesn't mean it plays out that way. So that's just another example. You got to give it time. Obviously, like you said, still a rookie. But yeah, as of right now, the hype is not matching the reality.
Absolutely. And then one last name, Justin, on the hot seat. Mike McDaniels from the Dolphins, right? When does this guy get on the hot seat? And I know what people are going to say. Well, they just re-signed him this year. Fine. That contract may have been a mistake. This Dolphins team, 2-5, terrible loss this week to Arizona. Everybody and their mother, not me, but everyone else, bet the Dolphins this week, laying the 5 at home against Arizona, outright losing. Chad Ryland, by the way, drains another third game-winning kick in 4 weeks. Okay. The Dolphins just, they don't look good. And I think their problems go beyond to this concussion situation. You look at the way they finish each of the last two seasons. They don't win in tough games. They don't win against tough teams. They don't win late in the season. They're not a tough team. I was surprised they signed Mike McDaniels. Now they're going to come in with like a 5-win season this year, probably a 6-win season. Does Mike McDaniels deserve to be on the hot seat a little bit?
I think he probably should. The other thing that makes it tough is you know, the fact that he's lost he hasn't had his starting quarterback for a long, you know, a big chunk of the games that he's coached. But I also look at that too, and I say, you know, I don't know how much of this is on Mike McDaniels versus the GM.
Right.
But how do you not have a competent backup in Miami for this team?
Totally.
Like, I'm not sure exactly who the blame falls on for that, but the blame falls somewhere. Like, you have an injury prone, you know, concussion prone quarterback who's missed extended periods of time in the past. And you got a team that's pretty good. And you don't do something to bring in a competent quarterback. Like, imagine a Joe Flacco right now down in Miami. Like, that would have been a perfect situation. Like, they dropped the ball hard. I agree. I think it, as time goes on, McDaniel's quirks are getting less and less amusing.
And it doesn't feel like he's in command of that team ever. I I've said this analogy before on the podcast. It reminds me a lot of the Pete Carroll Patriots. And I like McDaniel. I think he's a brilliant offensive mind. Don't think he's a leader.
Yeah. Yeah. I could totally see that. Yeah.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, listen, I think we're going to wrap it up. You got anything else you want to throw out there on this week's edition of the Around the League podcast?
No, man. I think that about does it.
We covered it. We covered a lot.
We did.
All right, brother. Well, listen, we want to wrap it up. Wish everyone a great week. Enjoy the game tonight on Thursday. Oh, I got a topic before we wrap it up. One more.
Yeah.
Gisele Bündchen, reportedly pregnant with baby number 3 from her jiu-jitsu instructor. Your thoughts, Justin?
You know, it's so funny because when they first rumored about separating, and everyone was like, oh, it's because Tom wouldn't leave, Tom wouldn't retire, this, this, and that. I mean, from what I had heard, that situation with her and the jiu-jitsu instructor, that went back. Like, that was not just a new development. Like, she had been with him, or she had been working with him for a while. So it's, I don't know. It's just, it, you know, to me, it's just like one of those situations where I look at it and like, I could care less. I want nothing to do with anything surrounding that drama or that news. But I do think it's interesting because I think Brady was vilified when they first split up. And now it's looking like there might've been something going on behind the scenes for a while.
Yeah. I don't think she was, I will say this. She was never good enough for our Tommy. No. I'm sorry. No. She was never good enough. He could have done so much better than her. She is so, I think, overrated. I don't find her attractive physically. I don't feel like she's a person of integrity is what she's showing. I don't know. Like, I don't see what the appeal is in terms of her. I mean, you know, when you marry someone, it has to be more about their mind and how you get along. And of course, the physical attraction is important too. Fine. But like, I don't see what Giselle offered. Tom could have had any number of women he wanted, you know, that would have been interested in him. And I feel like he settled for her and it burned him. And I feel so sorry for Brady.
I agree. I do too. I'm wondering if and when the goat gets back in the horse, who we'll see in the mix. But I think that'll be something interesting to watch, because you know what, your ex-wife moves on. She's having a baby. She's
got with her jiu-jitsu instructor. With her
jiu-jitsu instructor. Like, you can't tell me the competitor in him is trying to find like somebody newer and better and younger and all those things. Like, you know,
but what are you gonna do? You can't, if you're Brady, you can't start a fight with a jiu-jitsu instructor, nope. Even if you're Brady, because he'll probably still be able to kick your ass.
Exactly. No, he's put him, he's in a very tough situation. But again, I look at Tom as the competitor. And I say, oh, you know, he's going to do something. He'll come out with a new supermodel girlfriend or something soon. But I don't know. I can't see him just sitting idly by and doing nothing.
If it comes down to it, Justin, Brady versus the jiu-jitsu instructor, who wins? Fist fight.
Oh, this the jiu-jitsu instructor.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going Brady, 100%. I have the tiger. Okay, I have the tiger. You know, doing your fancy jiu-jitsu things around with like middle-aged ladies that come into your little studio and like, you know, old men that come in to stay fit. You're going up against the GOAT, who is no stranger, by the way, to getting clocked in the head in a way that a jiu-jitsu instructor would never experience. I'm sorry, unless he was like competing in an Olympic type forum or platform. Brady can take a hit, get back up. He's probably got the size advantage. I know he has the eye of the tiger. I'm going Brady.
Yeah. You know what? I can't.
Did I convince you?
I'm not convinced, but I can't fault you for thinking that way. The guy has just proved us wrong time and time again over the years.
Count him out. You do not count out Tom Brady.
Exactly.
All right. Now we're really going to end it on that. Want to wish everyone a great week. Have an awesome, awesome week. We will catch you next week on the next edition of Dr. Football Podcast. And see you, everyone.